It's something that none of us enjoy being faced with. It is painful, and it will be painful.
The Anchorage School District proposes cutting dozens of positions. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, January 18th. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, a less than rosy prognosis for the state's economy.
A lot will depend on the taxes and the budgets and tax changes and what goes on, but this can be a pretty scary picture.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the 2013 statewide BP Teachers of Excellence Program. Teacher nomination forms are available at bpteachers.com. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2013 PFD, or paper applications are located in your community. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
The Anchorage School District is considering cutting more than 200 jobs. Officials rolled out the proposed 2013-14 budget today at the Education Center. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has the story.
No classroom teachers are recommended for elimination, but many positions that support teachers are. Officials are quick to point out that the proposed cuts were done strategically, with more than half through attrition. Officials say flat funding from the legislature is to blame, coupled with increases in negotiated salaries, healthcare benefits, utilities, and fuel. School Board President Jeannie Mackey explains.
While funding has remained flat, our costs are rising. This has created a $25 million gap to fill. While this sounds like horrible news, and it is, it's something that none of us enjoy being faced with. It is painful, and it will be painful. There is opportunity that we have within our problem to do things differently.
What will be done differently, Mackey says, is that for the foreseeable future, resources will be focused more on the classroom and on teachers and students. But much of the web of support they've grown accustomed to will disappear. About 40 administrative support positions were the first to go, but most of the proposed cuts are to the positions that support teachers, including teaching assistants, counselors, and library assistants. A number of those who work more indirectly supporting teachers and students, like nursing assistants and custodians, were also eliminated. About half of the positions were eliminated in earlier cuts, and most of those were managed through attrition. Superintendent Jim Browder says he'll continue that strategy.
There's approximately 112 that have already occurred, leaving around 100 positions. We fully anticipate and hope that through attrition, we'll get that down to about 50 positions where they're actually 50, 60 positions where they're actually employees currently in them.
Other reductions include $3.4 million from supplies and equipment district-wide, a 50% reduction in travel, and a $150,000 reduction in school registration costs. Andy Holloman is with the Anchorage Education Association, the union that represents many of the certified employees impacted by the cuts. He acknowledges that the district is not to blame.
The school district's responding to the flat funding from the legislature. I don't think anyone on the school board, and I know that Dr. Browder doesn't think these cuts are a good idea, but there absolutely is an impact in the classroom.
Still, Holloman admits that benefits and pay increases for workers are contributing to the budget crunch, and he says he expects them to be discussed at upcoming union negotiations. Along with the budget, the district handed out a packet outlining their comprehensive multi-year plan to increase student achievement, which was developed in 2012. The plan aims to get 90% of students proficient in reading, writing, and math, improve attendance, and increase graduation numbers. Dwayne Moran is president of the Anchorage Council of Education, another union representing support staff. He's concerned that all seven of the graduation support coordinators in the district are slated to be cut, eliminating an entire program.
While they are not in the classroom, they have a tremendous positive impact to students, and the ones that are most at risk of not graduating. So that's where the cuts as a community, we don't want them to be falling upon the economically advantaged or the special needs students disproportionately, but I'm concerned is that they may.
Moran questions whether teachers can achieve the lofty goals of the district's comprehensive plan without support staff. Superintendent Browder will present his administration's budget recommendations to the school board at 2:30 p.m. on Thursday, January 24th at the Education Center boardroom. The board will vote on the budget on February 21st. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
This week, Governor Sean Parnell rolled out his latest proposal to revamp the state's oil tax structure. It's the third time he's tried to do this, and the last two attempts resulted in a stalemate. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez tries to parse out what's really different this time around.
Another session, another oil tax debate, and the rhetoric? Well, it's mostly the same. Here's the governor.
Well, Alaskans haven't always seen eye to eye on these issues. We can all see the obvious, that unless we restore balance to our tax system, our oil fields will become obsolete. We must make reforms, and we must make them now. Waiting, it only makes this problem worse.
And here's House Minority Leader Beth Curtula, a Democrat from Juneau.
The governor's new bill would mean that when the oil industry rakes in record profits, Alaskans will be firing teachers and troopers and not building roads and not building ferries.
About 90% of the state's revenue comes from oil production. Right now, it's taxed in a variety of ways. Companies like Exxon and ConocoPhillips pay royalties on oil they drill, and they pay a base production tax on their profits. They also pay out a progressivity tax that operates sort of like a sliding scale, where they get taxed at a higher rate as the price of oil goes up. Last year, the governor's bill focused on bracketing that progressivity tax. Michael Pawlowski works with the Alaska Department of Revenue and specializes in oil taxes.
And so what bracketing did was try and apply a progressivity much like your personal income tax.
Just like top income earners don't pay the top rate on all of their money, oil companies would get to pay lower percentages on the first $30 they get per barrel, and then their taxes would go up incrementally. This time around, Parnell is proposing getting rid of progressivity altogether, so that all oil be taxed at the same rate, no matter what the price is.
So it flattens the tax system to a 25% base tax rate.
Pawlowski explains that the bill has a few other provisions. He worked on the team that helped create it, and he crunched the numbers for the Department of Revenue's analysis of what it would do. He says the governor's bill would get rid of a 20% capital expenditure credit that the state gives to companies who are spending money to extract oil. So, they would lose a tax break while they're trying to produce oil, but get their taxes cut once they start putting barrels through the pipeline. Additionally, the governor's bill would change the way a 25% operating loss credit is paid out. Right now, if a company that's pretty new to Alaska puts $10 million a year into exploration but they aren't producing anything, they can get $4.5 million from the state each year to help them cover their losses. Under the governor's bill, they would only get $2.5 million from the state, and that would only be paid out once the company actually starts producing oil. So I asked Pawlowski what all that would do to revenue.
You know, we get rid of the progressivity.
Which leads to a reduction in state revenues at this projected oil price. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important to remember is that across the range of oil prices, this will look different.
According to the fiscal note that Pawlowski helped draft, the governor's bill would give oil companies a tax cut of about $1 billion if oil prices and production turn out to be as forecasted. But, of course, there's a lot of uncertainty when it comes to the economics of oil.
And just remember that looking 5 years into the future about what exactly a company is going to spend or what exactly oil production is going to be, these are forecasts around which the legislature, the governor, the public all base their decision, but there's still a forecast.
Which is sort of the rub. Over the next few weeks, legislators, staffers, and anyone watching the oil tax debate from afar is expecting a lot of back and forth over what changing the oil tax structure would actually do to the state's coffers. That debate starts in earnest on Tuesday, when the governor's oil tax bill will get its first committee hearing. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, growing jalapenos in Alaska in the winter.
In the dark and with the cold, my spirit feels better when I'm tending to something.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. GrantStation, your fast track to funding, helping identify appropriate grant makers for your organization's programs and projects. On the web at grantstation.com. And by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A.
The unemployment rate in Alaska dropped to 6.6% in December, APRN's Peter Granitz reports.
The decrease of 0.1% from November continues a downward trend. The state has seen its unemployment rate decline since August. At 6.6%, the Alaska unemployment rate is the lowest it's been in more than 4 years. It was the last gauge for 2012. The state saw a decrease of 0.6% throughout the year. And the state unemployment rate remains lower than the national rate at 7.8%. The highest rate of unemployment in the state is the Aleutians East Borough, with a staggering 28.6%. The lowest was on the North Slope. That borough's seasonally adjusted rate for December was just 4.6%. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
Alaska's economy weathered the Great Recession better than most states and should hold steady for the foreseeable future. But depending on who you ask, there could be gloom on the horizon. World Trade Center Alaska brought its annual statewide economic forecast luncheon to Juneau yesterday. As KTOO's Casey Kelly reports, two economists offered differing predictions for the state's fiscal future.
Northern Economics Vice President and Senior Economist Marcus Hartley says he's a pessimist when it comes to Alaska's long-term economy, but he admits the state has done pretty well in recent years, even as other parts of the country struggled.
Alaska is kind of an object in motion that stays in motion. It keeps kind of chugging along like a freight train.
In 2012, Alaska's gross state product was $53 billion, which beat Hartley's forecast and represents a 4% increase from 2011. Job growth also outpaced last year's expectations, led by the healthcare and financial services sectors. But Hartley says 2013 could be the last year in which the state fails to achieve even a small level of growth. He's predicting the gross state product will remain flat this year, and he worries $53 billion may be as good as it gets.
I don't know if we're capped out, but there's the beginnings of a trend there.
The first factor he cites is declining oil production. Alaska currently ranks behind Texas, North Dakota, and California on the list of top oil-producing states. The price of Alaska North Slope crude is still higher than oil produced in other parts of the country, but Hartley says even that might not be sustainable.
There's a pipeline being planned from Texas to California. We also know that there's plans for shipping oil via rail up to the refineries in western Washington. And so there is some concern that oil that's being produced from the middle of the country will get to the West Coast and start to undermine the price that we have.
Those projects are still several years away, but Hartley says state spending is a concern right now. He points to a study from the University of Alaska's Institute of Social and Economic Research that shows the state may need to use savings to maintain services in next year's budget. The same study predicts a significant deficit by 2023 and recommends immediately cutting the state budget by $2 billion.
A lot will depend on the taxes and the budgets and tax changes and what goes on, but this can be a pretty scary picture.
If Hartley is a pessimist, Greg Wolf is an optimist. The executive director of World Trade Center Alaska says the state is exporting more goods to other countries than it has at any point in history, an estimated $4.5 billion in 2012.
That is somewhat down from the previous year where we were just over $5 billion. It's about a 10% decline, but at this level, it's the second highest in our history. So it's still a very, very strong performance, near record levels. Not every year can be a record year.
Wolf thinks the trend of increased exports will continue. He says Alaska has an abundance of natural resources, is located along strategic shipping channels, and is already doing business with emerging markets like China that are buying a lot of goods.
We have what the world needs, and it's a world that's increasingly able to afford what we have.
China is currently the largest buyer of Alaska exports, followed by Japan, South Korea, and Canada. Part of the reason Wolf is bullish on the state's future is the belief that China will soon be an investor in Alaska, in addition to a buyer of goods.
We don't have any crystal ball or any inside information about this. All we do is look around the rest of the world. We look at any other natural resource jurisdiction in the world, and you'll see the Chinese as buyers, and you increasingly, if they're not there already, you'll see them as investors, partners. And that's likely to be a next step for Alaska.
Wolf says oil, natural gas, and minerals are among the goods emerging countries will need from Alaska, though seafood remains at the top of the state's export list for now. He says the big question will be if the state can produce those goods.
If we're allowed to responsibly develop these resources, we've got an incredibly bright future.
This is the sixth year the World Trade Center Economic Forecast Luncheon has come to Juneau. It's also held every year in Fairbanks and Anchorage. The event usually attracts a number of legislators in the capital city, but this year the only elected state official in attendance was Lieutenant Governor Meade Treadwell, who gave opening remarks. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
Dirt has been turned for the new state libraries, archives, and museum in the capital city. The project to hold Alaska's treasures in one building is already underway as contractor PLC Construction prepares the ground behind the current Alaska State Museum. Yesterday's cold rain in Juneau moved the groundbreaking inside. The museum was packed with state and local officials, including legislators and Juneau Assembly members, some who had their pictures taken with the special shovel in a trough of dirt near the museum's landmark Eagle Tree. Linda Thibodeau is director of the SLAM project.
I wish we could have had a beautiful sunny day and we could have gone outside and dug in the back lot, but we don't. It's winter time in Juneau, and we have a lovely pile of, as our commissioner said, fertile earth here, ready to go. This is a day we've been waiting for a long, long time.
So far, the legislature has approved about $81 million toward the $131 million project. Governor Sean Parnell has included $20 million in his proposed state capital budget. With 118,000 square feet, SLAM will have twice the space currently allocated to the state libraries, archives, and museum in Juneau, according to Department of Education and Early Development Commissioner Mike Hanley.
The new SLAM building will double the exhibit size and triple our storage space above what we have here. When we look at the operating costs, it will do it for the same operating costs that we have now. Because of a focus on energy and because of the work we've done with our architects, it's tremendous. A huge building that will be able to be operated for the same cost that we're operating this one now.
The SLAM project is to be complete in 2016. Education officials say it will allow the state to improve its technical and program support for archives, libraries, and museums statewide.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Providence Imaging Center, with its newest center in Solnodna, offering CT scans, MRI, ultrasound, and digital X-ray to residents on the Kenai Peninsula. Learn more at provimaging.com.
Increasing energy efficiency is an easy way to reduce energy consumption and save money. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation now offers financing to publicly owned facilities to make improvements to increase energy efficiency. Find out more about how their loan program works and if there are public buildings in your community that are a good fit for the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Program at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by AHFC.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugia,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Aleknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Josh Edge. This week on AK, growing. Alaska's summer months may be limited, but the growing season has no bounds. That is, as long as you grow indoors. AK's Ann Hillman found out that indoor gardens in Anchorage are blossoming even in unexpected spaces.
In a top-floor, one-bedroom apartment near the university, a young couple is making creative use of their small space. Tucked between the bathroom and bedroom doors sits the beginning of a dream: a heat lamp, a bottle of organic nutrients, and a healthy habanero pepper plant.
after a while, one day we looked down at our plant and there was two green habaneros right there. And we're just like, oh, this is so cool. And we're wigging out about it.
Christina Emerson and Justin Carpenter are experimenting with low-budget indoor growing. Their mini greenhouse is a $5 heat lamp illuminating the white painted corner of their hallway. The paint reflects the light back on their plants and seed starts.
So do you have to hop over your plants to go into the bathroom?
No, really. I put the seeds up on the thing and we kind of just shimmy around them.
Proudly displayed in the center of their living room is an experimental terrarium.
But yeah, the betas down there. I got a waterfall. This is all hydroton down here. And I have a pump, submersible pump in here, pumping the water through the hydroton, which I have my plants planted into.
Wait, so are these...
Those are real.
Those are real plants. Yeah. What are they?
Just house plants.
The water from the small fish pool cycles through to feed the blossoming house plants that are home to two red-eyed tree frogs.
And so the fish poop circulates through here, and it feeds my the nutrients for my plants.
The young couple started growing indoors when they moved to Anchorage from rural Alaska. They love the flavor of homegrown foods and the excitement of experimenting with fish plant growing systems. But due to practical concerns, like raising their landlord's electric bill, they have had to keep their dreams in check.
I mean, this stuff only uses a few cents a month, but if we went too extravagant, he might say something, because, I mean, you've seen her work. They have lights in there that if you plug in, they'll burn up like $500 a month.
Yeah.
Worth electricity. You know.
Emerson recently started work at the Fair Trade Organic Gardens, a specialty garden shop in Midtown Anchorage. The store is crammed with sample indoor greenhouses, light setups, pH testing kits, even space-age-looking indoor tents for creating mini ecosystems. It's run by a man who goes just by Jay the Plant Doctor. He helped start the shop 3 years ago and says business is booming, especially right now.
The swing from summer to winter is pretty big in Alaska. You'd expect that there would be a lot more business for horticulture in the summertime in Alaska, but actually the busy period is from fall till spring because most people are indoor growers here.
Partially, that's because of the limited outdoor growing season and because of the indoor options.
Hydroponic, bioponic, aeroponic, soilless. There's a lot of different methods, deep water culture, and each one has its own specific requirements.
With the right equipment, you can set up any type of environment and grow whatever you want. For him, it's a science, but some indoor growers think of it more as a way of coping.
This is my survival during the wintertime.
Stephanie Cohn stands in her Midtown duplex next to a glowing rack of plants and lights.
In the dark and with the cold, I just, my spirit feels better when I'm tending to something. And when you can't really do a whole bunch of tending in the wintertime, it's just really nice to be able to have it inside.
Cohn shows off her array of plants. On the top rack are practical items like fresh herbs and a tomato. Further down are her experiments.
And I have all my succulents. These are my little succulent experiments up here. And then the propagation shelf.
What's that? It's like little bubbles. It's like green bubble strings.
It's strand of pearls.
During her 6 years of testing it out, Cohn has had some setbacks.
I started in our little tiny apartment, little basement apartment when we first moved here. And, you know, I got a big bug infestation and got really frustrated. And I was like, I'll never do this again. But every year, when the light starts to fade, I'm like, okay, I have to start planting.
She's learned that a healthy indoor garden requires proper ventilation so the plants don't get too hot from the lights, and that spraying leaves with soapy water keeps the bugs at bay. Though she's an avid gardener, she emphasizes that anyone can do it.
I mean, it's really a lot easier than people think. I mean, it is. It really is. I mean, all it takes is just consistency in watering and a little bit of fertilization and a love for growing.
And for Emerson and Carpenter, just a little bit of space and the seeds of a giant dream. For AK, I'm Ann Hillman.
Now it's time for 300 Villages. This week, we're off to Tuntutulak, which is located on a Kuskokwim River tributary near the Bering Sea coast.
My name is Patrick Pavala. I'm the tribal administrator with the native village of Tuntutulak. Well, it's an unincorporated community with... We don't have a city status. We just have a tribal government as our governing body. And there's a little over 500 people here. language that we speak here, most of them, you speak Yupik, even little kids speak Yupik, and a lot of them don't know how to speak English yet, so, which is good, because, you know, we need to preserve our language. Yeah, a lot of people, like every other village around here, most of them are living off subsistence, and there's employment here with the tribal government and the school system, the electrical company, and this construction here just about every summer. In the winter time, whenever there's openings, we go after caribou and other birds like ptarmigan and rabbits. In the summertime, fall, spring and fall, we gather fish and salmon and other fish that we need to eat for the winter, like whitefish in the fall time, birds in the springtime, and mostly gathering salmon and halibut during the summer. It's nice, you can see, like, on a clear day, you can see as far as the horizon, 10, 15 miles, because the trees are not very big, and so if you kind of walk around, you can see outside of the village, and the houses are in such a way that they're not crowded at all, and, you know, there's a lot of room around here.
Patrick Pavala is the tribal administrator for Tuntutulak. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Ann Hillman, Annie Feit, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Josh Edge.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Daisha Eaton in Anchorage and Rosemary Alexander and Casey Kelly in Juneau. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau and Peter Granitz from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. Every Alaskan can make a difference when we file online for our PFD. You can shelter families in crisis, nourish the hungry and homeless, and protect those who have suffered abuse and neglect. It's easy to share a little of your PFD through Pick, Click, Give, and good things will happen for the causes you care about. Learn more at pickclickgive.org. This message sponsored by the Atwood Foundation, Flint Hills Resources, and Providence, Alaska. Rasmussen Foundation announces a March 1st deadline to apply for individual artist awards, which provide funding directly to artists to support their creative work. Learn more by participating in one of their informational teleconferences to be held in January. Visit Rasmussen Foundation on Facebook or on the web at rasmussen.org for more information. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.